When you're standing next to a broker and he refers his client to you to manage their property, and then you make it successful, so that broker knows he's going to get to sell it. What happens is when you're standing next to someone doing something instead of across the table from them, you develop a whole different kind of relationship with them.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What's going on, everybody? You know the drill. Every Monday, we're coming at you all things multifamily investing. And today, we got a great guest. This is the real deal, not some social media star or some multifamily guru. This is someone who's actually been doing it for a long time, over 24 years of experience. He's managed over 16,000 multifamily units. His company's vertically integrated, so he has a management arm to that. And we talk why he did that and how that's helped him scale throughout his career. So our guest is Ken Yee. And Ken, also in the background, he worked for Deloitte. He's a CPA, Deloitte, in their mergers and acquisitions, their M&A department. He also worked for private banking, and between both his private equity deals, real estate deals, he's been in over $2 billion worth of acquisitions or transactions. So Ken is the real deal. And we have a wonderful conversation that I got a bunch of value out of. And I know you guys will too. We talk about why he left that job. He had a great job at Deloitte, right? Mergers and acquisitions, great job. And he left because that family life balance just wasn't there. He realized he could actually even make more money investing in real estate. He ended up investing in 3 properties while working for Deloitte. And 3 years later, he sold them and made $500,000. And this was in the early 2000s. And these were on smaller deals. And he just knew that's what he needed to do because he could make that type of money doing that. He knew he was good at it. He knew he could do it, but it would also give him time back to have that true life work balance, or at least more of a balance, right? Obviously, there's, in my opinion, there's no such thing as perfect balance, but there's seasons, I think, right? There's times when you go harder in one thing and something else suffers. And then there's another season where those things flip. Ken's situation, he didn't really have different seasons. It was just constantly one season and that was his work, and his family suffered. So this, the multifamily allowed him to get more time with his family. And so we talk about obviously that, but also how he's been able to scale his business, how he's been able to enter a hot market like Florida and actually scale there, and what that's taken. We talk about building relationships because this is a relationship business. And it's just a really good episode. We talk about what you should look for in an operator. So if you're a passive investor, what you should look for within an operator and the type of person you should invest with, which we jive on a lot of this stuff. We agree on a lot of stuff. And it was just a really good episode I think you all will like. So without further ado, here's Ken. Hey, Ken, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
I'm excited to have you. We had a little conversation beforehand, and I feel like I told you we're kind of jiving on the same wavelength. So I'm excited to jump into this one. Listeners, Ken comes with a great background and extensive experience. So I know I'm going to get a lot of value out of this. So I know you will too. So Ken, everyone loves a good origin story. So if you don't mind sharing your background, how you got into multifamily.
Yeah. So I'll try to keep it short. I tend to be long-winded, but I'll shorten it for you. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio. Real small home, real humble beginnings. Went to University of Toledo, got my undergrad. Then I moved to Cleveland, went to work for a bank as a commercial lender, and spent my evenings going to school at Case Western Reserve, got my grad degree there. When I graduated with my degree in accounting, went to work for Deloitte, where I will spend the next 7 years doing a lot of M&A work and a lot of really fun stuff. But man, it was hard. I mean, you just work like a dog as a CPA. Well, what happened to me, that is when things changed for me, because this was 25 plus years ago. My daughter and son were very young. My daughter was just born. I remember being in her room in the middle of the night doing her night feeding, right? Because that was my time with her, because I was working like a dog as a CPA. So that was my quality time with my newborn in the middle of the night, giving her nighttime feeding. And I always loved that time because it was really quiet time, and it's her and I, and we're bonding and all that stuff. But what happened to me was I started, as I would sit there and I would start to get frustrated. I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is my quality time with my daughter and it's 2 a.m. Like something's wrong with this picture.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm working 80 hours a week and I can't figure out how I'm going to put my kids through school without taking on debt because I just wasn't making enough money, even as a CPA. You know, there were a lot of things that I wanted to do for my family that I just couldn't figure out how I was going to get there, especially working the way I did. So I got a little frustrated and I decided, you know what, I have to change this. And so I spent a year and a half and a lot of money trying to figure out this business. back then, there weren't as many resources as there are today. So it took me a lot longer to figure it out. But over the next couple of years, I bought three buildings, very small buildings, 28, 24, 22 units, not big buildings at all. But I sold them 3 years later. And this is the part that's mind blowing. I made $500,000 on those three buildings. Back in 2000, I think I sold them.
Wow.
So what happened was, I thought I had a plan here that was going to work, but now I actually proved that plan. I mean, think about this. I was working at Deloitte 60, 80 hours a week. I bought three apartment buildings on the side, sold them 3 years later, made more money on the side in this business than I did working as a CPA that I studied and worked so hard to be. It was then I realized I figured this out. I know now how I'm going to stop working. I know now how I'm going to be able to put my kids through school and give my family everything I wanted. So from that point forward, I just stuck with real estate and just fast forward 20 years, 25 years. And I'm proud to say that we've helped hundreds of investors do exactly what I did. So that's kind of my background. I think a lot of people reach a turning point in their life where like, this, I've had enough. This has got to change. And that's what happened to me. And it was that time I spent with my daughter that really made me realize, man, I got to fix this.
That speaks to a lot of, like, that just reminds me of kind of myself. And I'm sure a lot of other real estate investors too. You know, I worked in the financial services industry. And after about almost 7 years, I just knew it wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
The time commitment, just values didn't align. I just knew there was a better way for people to grow their wealth than,
yeah,
than what we were providing when I was there. And another factor too, that I think aligns with you too, is then I decide, okay, if I want to do something different, like I shouldn't just look for the next job. It should be, okay, what type of life do I want and what kind of career will fit that? So I knew I wanted to make a decent living, obviously, but I also wanted a flexible calendar to be able to spend time with people and family that I care about. And so then I just started assessing people around me that were successful, that also had a flexible schedule, people that I just run across over the years. And it's funny, they all had the same thing in common. They were in one form of real estate or another. So
yep.
I always loved real estate. I thought it was going to be more of just like a thing I would invest in on the side while I was working in finance, kind of like what you did. But then I realized, No, this is like the way. It doesn't have to be a side thing. So
yeah.
Was it that when you proved out that plan and sold, made $500,000, is that what kind of gave you the courage to go all in and counting, or was it more than that?
Yeah, no, I was successful at Deloitte. I felt like I was, at least. You know, I was a tax manager doing M&A work, the glory work that you could do as a CPA. I wasn't stuck behind a desk doing tax returns all the time. So yeah, I mean, if you think about your goal in life, is you have certain goals, and if you can't figure out how to get there, and all of a sudden this thing happened to you that made you realize, wait a minute, I did this on the side. Imagine if I actually committed all my time, energy, and resources to this. I did $500,000 in 3 years on the side, Jesus. And you know what? I was right. I mean, I've since developed a wealth building plan for myself, and we share it with our investors. But if you just do this methodically over a long period of time, it's not hard to even invest passively with firms like ours and turn a $100,000 investment 20 years to over $1 million, $1.2 million, even paying taxes when these properties are sold and reinvesting. I did the math on that, and it is absolutely mind-blowing how much wealth you can create in this business. Yeah, that's why. I mean, it was money motivated. I also really liked the fact that I was going to build this firm. You know, we have 50-ish employees. We're throughout all Central and Northern Florida, and we're continuing to grow. So I really am building something that is not somebody else's. It's mine. That really was cool. I felt like that was cool. And I was right. It is cool. It is a lot of fun building something for yourself.
Well, there's a couple things I want to unpack there. One, you mentioned a wealth building plan or tool. And this show is called Multifamily Money for a reason. Obviously, multifamily, because that's the investment vehicle I use and love. But also the money aspects. I come from finance backgrounds. We know you can make a lot of money, but what's more important is what you keep. So we love to talk about that too. So if you wouldn't mind diving into that.
The math I did, I just wanted to understand what happens if I invest $100,000 and let's say we implement our typical value add 5-year hold, right? I got to make some assumptions. And we typically underwrite, our goal is a 15% annual return, right? Our actual returns have been considerably better than that. And you can see it in Verivest and lots of different places. But so I said, all right, let's assume it's 17. I think the number was 17.5%. So let's assume that we invest in a property, invest $100,000. We hold it 5 years. We sell it. The average annual return over that 5-year period is 17%. I pay the taxes on the gain and I take what's left over and I do it again. And then I do it again. And I do it again. And I just kept doing that every 5 years. That math, basically, it's compounding. but you're compounding 17% annual return. I mean, those are nuts. Now, you can't guarantee a 17% or 17.5% or 15%. You can't guarantee it. But when I look at the risk level of various assets that you have a choice to invest in, I can't find a lower risk asset than apartments. I mean, everybody needs a place to live. And if you're in a high demand growth area, it seems like when I look at all the other alternatives, the crypto and the stock market, and you name it, apartments just seems to be a relatively low risk investment. So if I can find a low risk investment and figure out how to make 15, 20%, 30% in some cases annual returns, I need to do that. And let's put this plan into place. It's not going to get you rich overnight. You're not going to win the lottery. But over a long period of time, it just has massive compounding effects. So that's the plan. We've had a lot of our investors kind of do this. They just keep reinvesting. They just keep reinvesting the same money, right? So remember, I started with 100, but I think the math, I don't have it up in front of me, but if I think the math works out, at the end of that day, I have like 188. I could be wrong in that number. It's somewhere close to that. Well, now I'm investing 188. Fast forward, I do that again. It's, and I don't remember the third iteration, but you can see how you're investing more and more money every single time you turn that property. Even with paying taxes at a 20% capital gains rate, that still works.
Yep. As Albert Einstein said, compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. There's a reason he said that. It's just so powerful. It's that hockey stick effect.
Yeah. You just have to stick with it. I mean, you're not going to get rich overnight in real estate. It's not going to happen. But I always say, and there's no guarantees, but it's not a get rich quick scheme. It's more of a get rich for sure thing, right? You can't say for sure because there's no certainty. Can't guarantee anything, but boy, the chance of success is so much higher.
Statistically, yeah, for sure. And Ken, you keep mentioning your investors. I know we briefly discussed this before we hit record, but I'd love you to dive in. I know you have four rules that you think investors must follow when choosing who to invest with, which is important to me too, because coming from finance, you know, your fiduciary duty to your investors is really important.
It is. Yeah. So I get the benefit of talking to a lot of investors that are trying to figure out where to put their money. And a lot of them that we talked to are frustrated with the stock market. There's a lot of money moving into what I'll call the private equity space. That's kind of what we are, right? We're private capital, private placement. And so I think the Jobs Act and all the law changes that made it possible for us to do what we do, I think is massive. I think it's massive for the investors because they never had access to these deals before. And it's massive for us as investment firms because we couldn't get access to those investors. We just couldn't get access to them. So I thought, you know what, this is really important. As I continue to talk to investors, what is it that when I see an investor have a bad experience with a firm, what is it? And I came up with these four rules that when I tell you what they are, you're going to be like, of course, make total sense. But you'd be shocked at how many times people don't follow them. So number one, I want you to make sure that whoever you invest with has experience. And you're thinking, well, of course, I could tell you half the people that I talk to, they have invested with people who've never done it before. That's really brave. I don't like that risk setup, right? So why do you want people with experience? Because you're investing in a business. It just happens to be an apartment building and you don't know what thing is coming around the corner. You have no clue. Who'd have thought that the pandemic was coming? Who'd have thought that crazy inflation was coming, right? So you've got to know that that management team that you've invested in, they have the experience to figure out how to navigate whatever's coming next. So experience is number one, and that's why it's important. Number two kind of goes with that track record. You want to make sure that they have a track record, one that they're willing to share. We, for example, hired Verivest to vet our entire track record. I think we've done 18 or 20 deals. I don't remember how many is there, but we had some third party look under the hood. They had to vet all of our deals. And so the returns that we're showing people have been vetted by a third party. So not only do we have a track record, but we're willing to show it and it's been verified. I think that's super important for rule number two, right? Because again, if they haven't done it or they're not willing to show their track record, that should raise some concern, at least for an investor. The third one, it's a little harder to figure this out because you got to just think it through. But I want people to make sure the investment firm puts the investors first. So what you have to do in order to figure that out is you got to look at the terms of the deal. You got to read the private placement memorandum, at least the summary section, to see, okay, who gets paid and when? And you kind of ask yourself, is it possible for that real estate investment firm to do well and you as a limited partner not do well? That can't happen, in my opinion. You should not invest in that situation because that means you're secondary to their interest. If I'm asking you to put money in our deal, I should put you first. You don't have any control over the deal. I do. So it's only fair. That's what I believe. I like the people to follow that third rule. And the last one is transparency. I talked about our track record and how transparent we are. We invite people to visit properties that they've invested in. We'll have the manager show them around. They get to see what the apartments look like. We send them out statements every quarter with not only the profit and loss and the rent roll and all that balance sheet, all that stuff, but it also includes a narrative. Hey, here's what's going on at the property that you invested in. Here's what our renovation plans are. Here's what we did last quarter. Here's what we're doing next quarter. Here's what our occupancy is. Here's where our delinquencies are. See, it's real transparent. And then if an investor calls here and has a question, we talk to them and we tell them, hey, what's your question? What's really going on? And that way, the real answer from the real person that actually knows what's going on, right? It's not some generic answer that you would give to anybody. So I think that if people follow those four rules, I mean, you're never going to eliminate all the possibility that your investment won't go well. But boy, you sure are really stacking the odds in your favor. Wouldn't you agree?
I couldn't agree more. And to your first point of, you were like, what I'm about to say is going to sound very obvious, but not a lot of people follow it. And that's, I couldn't agree with you more from investors that I've spoken to. Like the last point on transparency, I always tell them what we do to be transparent, obviously. And we send out monthly reports and we show everything. We show every bank account, all wires, ACH, and checks that come in and out of every single account. We have a variance report to show them we're on budget, off budget, obviously all the financials, everything. And we're always open to talks. We have quarterly calls, but if they want to call in between that, obviously we're open. And there's more we do, but
you're doing it right.
Just to highlight the fact that some people are shocked by that, that people they invest with, they don't get anything close to that. And I thought that was just a given. I thought that was just kind of base level minimum you have to do, right?
You and me both, Sean. Yeah. I mean, you're treating people like you would want them to treat you.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. That's what you should do. You're right. I hear those same stories and I think, how could you live with yourself? You got a guy to invest $100,000 with you and now you won't even return his phone call. How do you look in the mirror every day?
Right.
I don't know how those people do that.
And the track record thing, I agree too. The first major deal I ever did, I partnered with someone who had a 15-year track record.
Perfect.
I didn't want to take people's money and put it into something that I trust myself, but like you said, you just never know what's going to happen. And if you have someone on your side, been through some storms, it makes it better. And all I always tell my listeners, like, you obviously don't have, it's like the egg before the chicken, right? It's like the broker, the investor, they want you to have a track record, but you can't have one until you make one.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do is just to partner with someone who has one. And sometimes it's even more than once, maybe a couple times.
Yep.
I think that's what this is business about. And when I get people that reach out to me to ask for me to partner with them, I'm always hesitant about that too. I want to know what their track record is. I feel like you're probably at the point where you just kind of do your own deals, but I get people that seems like desperation. They're asking, you want to get on this deal and bring your investors to this deal? It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. We got to go on a date first here.
You know what? That's the exact same analogy I use. This is like courting a significant other. I mean, you don't go from 0 to 100 in 3 minutes. I mean, you just don't do that. But you're right. You said something that was key there, and that is they're desperate.
Yeah.
They're desperate, right? Part of that problem is the fact that they're in over their head, and most people don't want to give their money to people who've never done it before. And there's a lot wrong with that. So you've done it right. And we do deals with other people. We use that as a way to grow. We just have to stay in control of the deal. That's what's critical because, I mean, imagine if I had to tell my investors that I went in on a deal with somebody else with their money, but I gave the other guy control, but he's never done it before. I mean, could you imagine that conversation? You can't. There's no way we would have that conversation. So we do it. We're just super careful. We want that match to be made in heaven, right? We want to make sure that everybody's value system aligns and so on. So yeah, you got to use partners in this business. It's just too much capital required.
Right.
And just choose your mate carefully. That's what I would say to people.
Yeah. And you mentioned to me earlier that you're vertically integrated, which I think you just alluded to.
Yeah.
How has that helped you scale? It seems like I've been doing a lot of research on really successful operators like yourself. And it seems like the best of the best are vertically integrated to some point, whether it be both property management and construction management, or at least one of the two.
Yeah.
So how has that helped you scale?
Well, it's huge. So remember, we grew up in Cleveland. So there really was no third-party management in Cleveland because nobody invests in Cleveland from outside of Cleveland. That's just the way it always was. So it was always an owner-operator town. So if you were going to get in this business, you had no choice but to run your own deals, run your own properties. So now over time, as you go out of market, you realize, okay, maybe I'll hire a third-party manager. But here's the problem. After you've been doing it for 10 or 15 or 20 years, we've learned a lot, right? We've made a lot of management mistakes. We fix them. We have systems and processes and best practices, and we just know how to do it. And so I've always believed that there's making the deal, but there's executing the business plan. And you can really screw up that execution and lose an enormous amount of money. So after a while, what happens is I find it hard to turn the reins over to my business to somebody who might be 10 years behind my learning curve. I'm thinking, wait a minute, why do I want to do that? That doesn't make sense to me, right? It just doesn't. So there's so many reasons why we're vertically integrated and why it helps us. Now, one of the side benefits to that, we do some third-party management, not a ton, but we do some. But what I found is Florida is a hyper-competitive market.
Yeah.
It's all about relationships, right? We talked about that. It's always about relationships. Well, when you're standing next to a broker and he refers his client to you to manage their property, and then you make it successful, so that broker knows he's going to get to sell it. What happens is, when you're standing next to someone doing something instead of across the table from them, you develop a whole different kind of relationship with them. So what we found, and this was a side benefit, I just didn't predict it in the beginning, is that the broker community looks at us very, very differently. And really, it has helped us enormously get deals that have been very successful for us. So there's a lot of reasons to be vertically integrated. There's also a lot of reasons not to. If you don't know what you're doing, you don't want to spend your time. There's a lot of reasons not to, but we have found it to be a big part of our success because we're just so close to everything on the ground. How many times have you heard people put together renovation plans and then never change them, right? Well, we're constantly changing our plans because we learn things every single day about what's going on at the property. So I know that's a long-winded answer, but you know, I think it has been a big part of our success.
Appreciate you sharing that. And that reminds me, I didn't really think of it beforehand, but the first big deal, the first 100 plus unit deal I ever want was awarded by a broker. I went there with my construction manager and we did a thorough, the broker said this is the most thorough tour
that
he's ever seen. And that went a long way and knew that we know what we're doing. We're serious, both about the business and the deal itself. And yeah, I think that helped us get that deal.
It did. It probably helped you get the deal. And it also helped you feel better about raising money for that deal.
Oh, for sure.
You knew it cold, right? I've always said knowledge builds confidence, right? It just does. And so you knew what was going on there. There was no guessing. Could we do this? I think we can do this. You already knew.
Yeah. And that's how we try to do it every time now, because it just eliminates so much one uncertainty, like you said, but also just time too. Like, because you just know, and you can get a rough estimate of how much CapEx you need. Mm-hmm. And to your point, whether you can do it or not, when I talk to people, I highly recommend it. Depending on the property management company, you could bring them, but it just depends how, if they're really skilled at the construction management side. Because let me tell you, you have in-house, but from my third-party experience, I can tell you not every property management company is good at construction management, or probably most aren't.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
If you think of all the things that have to be put together to be a really good property management firm, they're running businesses. It's no different. It's a lot of resources. And the world generally tries to get property management is on the cheap. And I would submit to you that is the worst thing you can do, because you're asking
pay for it one way or another.
Yes, I'd rather pay a property manager. Look, I am one, but I'd rather pay a property manager well, know that the job's going to get done well and done right, because that means you're going to be successful. Because if they don't do it well, I'm telling you, they can terrorize you, not on purpose, but with their failures. I mean, you can find yourself losing enormous amounts of money. I know, because I see it happen all the time. It makes me sick. It makes me angry, actually.
Yeah. You might have mentioned this. Do you third-party management, or do you just manage for your own property?
No, we do a little third-party management. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We don't do a ton, but we do some. Yeah. It just helps keep our infrastructure in place and, you know, helps make it better. And yeah, it's all right now. It's all in Florida. Yeah.
And you briefly mentioned building relationships, but is there anything else you want to add? Because we talked about this in such a huge part, especially going into a competitive market. Like you mentioned to me, you can't just show up one day and think you're going to get deals. So if you want to talk about that relationship building side of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have real experience with that, because when I left Cleveland and went to Florida, I mean, I remember getting off the plane in Tampa, walking off the plane, thinking to myself, okay, I got to go figure out how I'm going to be relevant here, because I'm not the only guy in town that decided, hey, I think it'd be a good idea to invest in Florida. Right. So now I had to figure out how to make myself relevant, how to do a lot of things. I'll tell you a funny story, just because you got to get creative sometimes to make people notice you and take you for seriously. So I remember I had a number of properties I wanted to visit. They were scattered over a pretty big area, and I was going to try to fly in and fly out the same day. And that's possible. What I did was I thought, man, this is going to be rough for me driving myself around. It's going to be tough. So I hired a car. I hired a driver and a car. And what I didn't realize at the time, but he picks me up in his little chauffeur outfit in my black SUV. So now you can imagine
what the broker's thinking,
right? Nobody knows who I am. I pull up to the first property tour and the guy gets out, opens my door, lets me out. The broker, his mouth almost hit the ground, right? To this day, that broker and I talk about that story. But from that point forward, in his mind, he's like, wow, this guy's for real.
Yeah.
Right. So somehow you got to find a way to build credibility, develop relationships, because that's what it takes to go into a market like Florida and actually get awarded a deal. I mean, I didn't get awarded a deal for quite some time after that. But what happened is we started to change people's opinion, because how do you stick out in a market that already has so much money they don't know what to do with it all?
Right, exactly.
So that's a little funny story about some of the weird things that you might have to do, some of the creative things you do to get noticed, to develop relationships with people. And I bought a deal last year, no, in the 21 from that same broker. Finally bought a deal from him, actually. Yeah, I hadn't bought one prior to that. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, it takes forever. And it's funny you said that, because we haven't broke into Florida yet, but we've been fostering those relationships. And one broker I flew down to it and met, and we had a great meeting. And he asked me why I was in town. So he must have thought, oh, I was just meeting him because I had some other plan. I was like, no, I flew down to see you and I fly out tonight. And he was just blown away. And so I think he just knew that I was, okay, he's serious. He's spending this money coming down here. He wants to.
That's exactly what he did. Yep.
Yeah. He wants to do business. And it takes those things. And that, to your point, you got to stand out. I've sent, to your point, everyone's reaching out, right? Everyone's sending emails. Everyone's making calls.
Yeah.
I've sent handwritten letters with a Starbucks gift card saying, hey, this coffee's on me. The next one I'd love to have in person. And then I leave my contact info. And I can tell you, they reach out every time when you do that.
They do. Yeah. See, it's about relationships. It's about getting noticed and then building that relationship, and take it seriously. Because the brokers, they get more, the ones in successful markets, they get more phone calls than they know what to do with. Trust me on that.
Yeah.
They have to figure out who to call back. And it's not that they're arrogant. They don't have enough physical time in the day to call everybody back.
Exactly. I was going to say that time is money to them, because they only eat what they kill. So they can't waste their time with someone that's not going to put food on the table. So I get it from their perspective too. And another point that reminds me is, once you do get under contract too, is do your best to make it a smooth process. Obviously, stuff can happen, but I've been thanked by brokers like numerous times saying, this has been the smoothest process we've ever had. We really appreciate that. And they like harp on that. You're not making them jump through hoops or trying to retrade left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And listeners, for those that don't know the term retrade, it just means you're trying to negotiate on the price because maybe you find something, maybe there's a foundation issue or what have you, and you want to renegotiate the price. Obviously, sellers hate that. They just want you to agree upon the original price you put in the LOI. And so that they like when you don't do that. And they're more likely to award you the next deal because they know you're easy to work with. I don't know if you've had that experience, Ben.
Oh, that is, you couldn't have said it any better. I mean, they care about certainty of close. And what happens to them, if you're in a competitive market, they're probably getting multiple offers on your deal, and the broker puts them in a little spreadsheet, and then they meet with the seller, and the seller goes down the sheet, right? Their order from highest price to lowest price, and the broker's commenting on every single one of those. And so the seller, unless they already know the buyer, the seller is looking to that broker 100% for their guidance. Who's going to close? Who's going to be able to get it financed? Who's not going to run me around and try to retrade me? And the broker does his or her best to lead their client to the right buyer, right? And it's not always about price. It usually is, but not always. But you then turn around, and it's okay to retrade on things that are legitimate, right? They're not going to hold that against you. But if there's things like, you know, that are obvious, if you just showed up and toured the property or you opened your eyes when you were there, and now you're trying to retrade on those, brokers don't like that. And what happens in good markets, they will just never call you again. You might be able to submit offers over and over and over, but they'll never take you seriously, because what are they going to say to their client? Yeah, we tried to go under contract with that guy, but he retraded us. You know what a seller does?
Okay, next.
Delete him. Don't want to hear about him. Yeah. That's really what happened. So do your homework up front. There's a whole theory of the tie it up and then we'll retrade them later. Yeah, you can only do that once in most markets.
Right, exactly.
Because the brokers won't let you do it a second time.
Right. Then you have to go to another market. And sometimes that doesn't even work too because the
They talk to each other.
Yeah, exactly. This month there's going to be the NMHC
yeah.
conference where they all go. And you know, they're talking about everything. You walk by and talk to one, one will be like, oh, I know that guy, like blah, blah, blah. So you just got to be.
Oh, they all know each other, just like we all know each other. Everybody knows everybody. Just assume that you're talking to one person, you're talking to everybody, as you probably are.
That's why it's a relationship business.
Yes, sir.
All right, Ken, before I ask you some final questions here.
Sure.
Where can everyone find you?
Yeah, the easiest way is kripartners.com/invest. I mean, we're raising money for our next fund. So love to hear from somebody who might be interested, but it's kripartners.com/invest. Keep it easy. And then you'll get to see our whole webinar about the fund, all the materials that you need to see, our investor testimonials, a case study that we did on a real deal that we did. So you can actually see how we do what we do. So yeah, I'd love to have them stop by kripartners.com/invest.
Check it out, everybody. And I'd probably love to have you back on just to talk about funds, because that's something we've talked about, but we haven't done yet. But that intrigues me.
Yeah, I love to.
And that's another thing brokers like too. If you have a fund, they know you have the capital right there to execute.
Massive advantage.
Yep. All right, Ken, a few questions before you go here.
Okay.
Kind of just a little rapid fire round here.
Okay, I'll do my best.
All right. So first, we've kind of hit on this, but why multifamily as an investment vehicle, and what type of life has it provided you?
Yeah, well, why multifamily? Because I can't find a lower risk asset that could generate the kind of returns that we're able to generate. What kind of life? I mean, I think I told you early on, I mean, it allowed me to put my kids through school. It's allowed me to, I mean, I don't have to work. I could be done tomorrow. I could, because I've made enough money in this business, but I love it. I enjoy doing it. And so it's given me the life that I want for me and my family. I was able to go to all my kids' baseball and basketball and all that stuff because I had that flexibility.
Love it. All right. What is a common mistake you see could be younger in the term of early in their career operators make?
Yeah. Well, if we talk about guys that are trying to get into this business as and buy real estate, it's FOMO. You know what FOMO is? Fear of missing out, right? So all their friends, oh, I closed on this, they closed on that. They're part of this club and that club. And they're like, Jesus, man, I got to get a deal. I got to get a deal. I got to get a deal. And they lower their standards and they buy stuff they shouldn't buy. That's the number one thing. The second thing, I know you asked for one, but the second thing that they don't do is they don't want to roll up their sleeves and do the hard work to figure out what the numbers really are. It's a lot of work, right? It's a business with a lot of moving parts and you really got to dive in. And I see a lot of people just try to play up here, just try to pretend like it's a high level game. But man, there's so many details that you got to nail down. So I know you asked for one, but there's two.
I appreciate it. Those are both great. And yeah, the FOMO can get people. I always hit on that. Don't let it, like you hear people say, I got this many doors, this many units, but you don't know behind the curtain. They could own 0.5% of those units.
Yes, they do that all the time.
Yeah, you just don't know. And don't let that discourage you. Make a stupid mistake. Or decision just to go post on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram that you closed another one. So no, I appreciate that. All right, Ken, second to last one here. What is a resource that you always recommend for someone in this business? It could be both an active investor or an LP too.
So in terms of resource, if you're an LP, I want you to find a way to vet people's track record. I like Verivest. They're not actively taking new customers, but if you find an investment firm that has a track record that's been vetted by them, a number one resource. If you're getting into this business, you're going to laugh, but you got to learn. You got so much to learn. So there's a number of people out there that teach what we do. We're starting to get into that a little bit because we just find so many people are trying to get into this business and they don't understand. So it's any of the training sites out there. You got to learn as much as you can. Go to as many masterminds and meetups and all that stuff. I mean, you're just going to learn nonstop from every single one of them. Just immerse yourself in it, because I guarantee you the resources and this podcast, for example, the resources that are available today are a billion times more than what I had back in 1996, 97 when I started out. I mean, there was nothing. I went to the local apartment association meetings. That was my source of information. And man, did it suck. I mean, it was boring. They were awesome, but it was just not any fun.
Right. It's crazy now what the information we can get just at the tip of our fingers, right? Before you had to go to a bookstore or a you know, meet up, and now you can just go on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube.
Yep.
It's all there. So
yeah, you can even go to our YouTube channel. We're putting out content constantly. That's not just entertainment, the real stuff that you need to know in this business. So yeah, a lot of different places.
I'll check that out. Last question here, Ken. Since I mentioned this is also personal finance, every Friday we do Finance Fridays. So if you had a time machine, this old question that everyone asks, if you had a time machine, go back in time and talk to your younger self, what is one piece of financial advice that you'd give to your younger self?
Yeah, think about money very, very differently. What I do now, I wish I would have done then. And that $500,000 that I made, right? I mean, yeah, I probably spent some of it, but what I really needed to do is take that $500,000 and use every penny of it to generate even more money with that, right? I didn't think about money that way. I thought about it as, look at this, all this money I have in my bank account. Look, now we can go on a fancy vacation. We can do this, we can do that. I can use it for living expenses. But I just didn't. Now I would have said, wait a minute, that $500,000, if I do this right, I can turn it into $5 million. What do I need to do that and use that money as a vehicle to get somewhere? I just never thought of money that way. And I do now. That's why, you know, our progress is exponential now.
That's awesome. I love that answer. I don't think anyone's actually said that.
Oh,
yet,
good.
Yeah. So
good.
I like that. I like that a lot. And that goes a long way. And that's what I try to impart too, is just, you know, live the life now that most people won't. So you can live the life in the future that most people can't. And that involves putting that money away and not maybe rewarding yourself to the extent that you would like now, but so you can kind of with no limits later on, right?
Yeah. You got to give yourself a little award because you just do.
Of course.
Yeah, you got to do that.
Taste it a little, right?
But use money to get, not use money to achieve that goal.
Yeah.
And that's to figure out how to make it grow.
Well, Ken, this has been a phenomenal episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time and imparting some great wisdom to myself and to the listeners. So thank you.
Well, Sean, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it and hopefully we'll come back.
I would love it. All right, listeners. As I always say, easy doesn't pay well and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you so we can all create the lives of our dreams and make this world a better place. All right, catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.